A-M-O-C-O, Amoco. Amoco presents the Edward R. Murrow Program with Don Hollenbeck. If you play golf, you've often come home and said, "Boy, was my game off today. I flubbed a drive and missed two easy putts." But you're driving. You seldom say, "I drove badly today. I went through a stoplight and drove too fast down Main Street." Yet how much more important driving a car is than driving a golf ball? Your safety, the safety of others, depends on your skill. Drive safely in a car you know is safe to drive. And now here is Don Hollenbeck with the news.
Good evening. Nothing that happened in the world today is going to cause as much shock, conversation, and argument as the fact that 90 cadets of the United States Military Academy at West Point are being cashiered for violation of the Academy's honor code. Specifically, Army Secretary Frank Pace Jr. says they are alleged to have sought outside assistance in their studies, a practice which is forbidden by the Academy's code of honor. No names are given, and none will be, but General J. Lawton Collins, Army Chief of Staff, says a majority of the Academy's football team is involved. General Collins told a group of senators today that most of the cadets involved have confessed to cheating in examinations. As he put it, the practice started among members of the football squad who found it difficult to keep up with their work while spending so much time practicing. They got copies of examination questions from other cadets who had taken the tests previously. The cashiered students have the right to demand a court-martial, but it's not expected that this recourse will be widely sought, since such proceedings would reveal the names of those involved, and the Army is, at the moment, being exceptionally careful to keep the names off the record. But if, as General Collins says, the majority of the Army's championship football team is involved, some names are going to be bound to emerge. The cadets are being dismissed from the Academy with what are called general discharges. They are not being expelled. The Army has five forms of discharge: honorable, general, undesirable, bad conduct, and dishonorable. General means a form of discharge given under honorable conditions, service satisfactory, given to a soldier not qualifying for an honorable discharge. The distinction seems to be a rather fine one. It may not be perceptible to the 90 young men who are thus cashiered from the service of their country with the stigma of cheats attached to their names, even though those names are not published in the newspapers or broadcast over the radio. The case of the dismissed cadets today provides opportunities for statements by men in public life. Senator Byrd of Virginia says it's one of the worst things that could happen to national morale. He says it indicates the moral fiber of the country is deteriorating, and goes on, these young men were supposed to represent the finest in young American manhood. Representative L. Gary Clementi of New York, a member of the House Armed Services Committee, says he'll ask a congressional investigation to make sure that such things don't happen again. He goes on to say the cadets must learn to rely on themselves, and he asks, when they get out on Hill 211 and the enemy hits them, what book are they going to look in then? Representative Clementi's question is rhetorical. It's conceivable that an officer who made use of a crib or a pony or the accumulated wisdom of his fellow cadets might know exactly what to do on Hill 211 and do it. As a matter of fact, a number of the men involved in this case have gone to Korea to be killed in action. This is in no sense to be interpreted as a defense of cheating in examinations. It's rather a suggestion that the matter be put in proper proportion, with the realization that if the same thing happened at any other institution of learning than the United States Military Academy, it wouldn't cause one-tenth of the consternation and public comment that this case has. Many people know more and care about the excellence of the United States Military Academy football teams than they know or care about the military abilities of the second lieutenant, it turns out each June. And the indication that the point is becoming better known to itself for this same reason is contained in that simple explanation that Chief of Staff General Collins gave the senators today. The practice of cheating started among members of the football squad who found it difficult to keep up with their work while spending so much time practicing. It's a fact of life that the emphasis on athletics has led to reprehensible practices in many schools and colleges. It's responsible for the fact that about 30 other young men have been tarred for life because of the sordid basketball payoff scandal. Now, the 90 young men of the United States Military Academy who are eligible for the draft, but not for commissions because of their discharge without honor, are the victims of a system which has allowed them to believe that the all-important reason for the existence of the United States Military Academy seems to be to go on through season after season without being defeated on the football field. And one can only reflect that it might be well if the shock and disappointment caused by this case at West Point could be engendered by some other cases involving morals and ethics. For instance, the case of Brigadier General David J. Crawford, commander of the Army's tank arsenal at Detroit, West Point, class of 1922. Just the other day, reprimanded and removed from his job for accepting favors from contractors with whom he did business. The usefulness of Brigadier General Crawford in Detroit is at an end, but he is being transferred by Army routine to another job in Germany, and there has been no congressional comment printed to the effect that his case indicates the moral fiber of the nation is going to pieces. And in the discussion of morals and ethics, we may move on from the United States Military Academy to the United States Senate. A subcommittee of that body today denounces what it calls the despicable backstreet type of campaign conducted in behalf of Republican Senator John Marshall Butler of Maryland last fall, but it finds the evidence did not justify unseating the senator. Butler defeated the Democrat Millard Tidings after an acrimonious campaign, and the gist of the subcommittee's report is that Butler campaign workers, some of them from outside the state, had sought to spread doubt of Tidings' patriotism and loyalty. Subcommittee members who signed this report are Democrats Gillette of Iowa, Monroney of Oklahoma, Hennings of Missouri, and Republicans Margaret Chase Smith of Maine and Hendrickson of New Jersey. The committee criticism centers on a campaign tabloid which printed a composite picture made by combining separate pictures of Tidings and the communist leader Earl Browder. It made it appear that Tidings was listening intently to Browder. A caption under the picture did say it was a composite, but the subcommittee said the picture was disapproved by Butler's campaign manager, and it added, "To this day, Senator Butler has not disclaimed responsibility for the tabloid, the faked photograph, or any other aspect of his campaign under investigation." There is at the moment no comment available from Senator Butler, but there is from Senator McCarthy of Wisconsin, who campaigned actively for him. McCarthy says he's not surprised at the actions of the two Republicans on that subcommittee, Smith and Hendrickson. McCarthy says they had previously gone on record as approving a whitewash of Tidings and condemning McCarthy for getting rough with the communists. The subcommittee's report has yet to be acted on by the full Rules Committee, but its records have been turned over to the Department of Justice for possible action. For one thing, the report says that $75,000 was spent on the Butler campaign. That's five times the amount allowed under Maryland law. And a footnote to the report is contributed by Senator Hendrickson of New Jersey. He comments on Senator McCarthy's comments as follows. Senator McCarthy's hasty estimate of the report seems to justify some of the criticism that has been leveled at him in the past. Developments in the controversy between Senator Douglas of Illinois and President Truman over the appointment of two federal judges indicate today that a truce between the two may be in the making. At the request of the Justice Department, the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee has postponed its checkup on one of the controversial appointees, and Chairman McCarran says it may be that someone is trying to pour oil on the troubled waters. The United Press quotes senatorial sources close to the administration as saying the president will offer to drop one of his appointees if Senator Douglas will do the same with one of his. The senator himself, however, says he has not been approached with any compromise proposal, and the administration says the Justice Department acted on its own initiative in asking the postponement of the hearing, although Chairman McCarran says he can recall no previous occasion when the department has taken similar action. Some developments today in the cost of living on this third day under the new controls law. The Office of Price Stabilization announces that Ford and Chrysler have asked approval of price increases on passenger cars of about 10%, and those requests are expected to be approved, along with others which will be coming along. The Wage Stabilization Board announces a new public policy today, subject to approval by economic stabilizer Eric Johnston. It would authorize workers to seek wage increases to keep pace with the cost of living, even if those increases exceed the government's 10% ceiling. Board Chairman George W. Taylor says it's been decided that all wages should be related to the cost of living, and that if prices are stabilized, there'll be a little upward movement in wages, but if prices go up, then wages will have to go up as well. President Truman called the turn on that one when he signed the new controls bill. He pointed out that any upward price movement would have to be accompanied by one in wages. The Census Bureau reports today that more Americans had jobs last month than ever before in history. 62,526,000 of them at work, and unemployment was at one of the lowest levels since World War II, and at a record low for this season of the year. Increased employment since last year was made up almost entirely of women because of the drain of manpower into the armed forces. The government today bans the start of all new construction until the 1st of October unless the projects use only minor quantities of steel, copper, and aluminum. That would permit the construction of most homes, small stores, and even some amusement places which have until now been prohibited. The new order affects factories, office buildings, schools, hospitals, and public buildings. Interior Secretary Chapman said today the Iranian oil tie-up may cause some shortage of fuel oil in this country next winter. He says some of our supplies may have to be diverted to Europe to make up for the lack of Iran's products. Even before the trouble in Iran, the secretary said the domestic fuel supply was expected to be close, although no actual shortage had been expected. As for the Iran problem itself, a British cabinet mission left London for Tehran today for a resumption of conferences aimed at settling the nationalization issue, which the British now accept in principle. In Korea, the Allied and Communist truce negotiators are beginning their 19th session with the issue of the ceasefire zone still unresolved and no agreement yet in sight. There is no official suggestion that the inconclusive arguments may be near an end. The Allied intention is reportedly to continue these talks just as long as the Communists are willing. There is also no evidence that any attempt to set a deadline has been made by either side. It's announced in London today that Princess Elizabeth and her husband, the Duke of Edinburgh, will be the guests of President and Mrs. Truman in Washington near the end of October, and they may stop in New York on their brief American visit, which will follow their tour of Canada. Waxy Gordon is held by New York police and federal authorities, a key figure in a narcotics ring, distributor to the West Coast of imports from Europe and the Near East. Gordon is 63, with a criminal record going back nearly 50 of those years, and in the 20s, one of the principal suppliers of illegal liquor. District Attorney Thomas Dewey got him sent to prison for 10 years for income tax evasion. He did a little business in black market sugar when he got out of Leavenworth, served time for that, and then he turned to dope. When police and federal agents arrested him on a New York street corner with a package of heroin, they say he fell to his knees and begged the sergeant to shoot him rather than take him in for dope. As a fourth offender, Waxy Gordon may now go to prison for the rest of his life. This is Don Hollenbeck. I'll be back in a moment with the footnote to the news. Now, here is Bob Dixon.
You know how a magnifying glass makes things look bigger, but even a magnifying glass isn't strong enough to see a thousandth of an inch. You've got to have a microscope to really see something that small. But when just a thousandth of an inch is worn away from your car's cylinder walls, well, you can certainly feel it in loss of engine power and efficiency. A lot of this wear, engineers say, comes from deposits left in the cylinder by incompletely burning gasoline. So you can see how wise it is to use a motor fuel that can burn completely, one that leaves no metallic deposit. That motor fuel is Amoco gas. This is a special motor fuel, far, far different from the rest. It's made of pure petroleum, with nothing added. Amoco gas helps to keep your engine clean, running at top efficiency. You save on upkeep, you save on mileage. Get the whole story about this wonderful Amoco gas. Drive up to the Amoco gas pump. Have the man fill the tank. Find out for yourself how much more Amoco gas gives you. You'll agree it's wonderful. Now here's Don Hollenbeck with a footnote to the day's news.
The Census Bureau reports today that the birth rate in this country is approaching an all-time record. That record was set in 1947, and the Bureau says if the trend continues, 1951 is going to be the biggest year ever for babies. The Bureau quite reasonably credits the increase to an equivalent upswing in marriage licenses that began with the start of the Korean War. And that's the footnote to the news.
If you've been running your car on regular gas, may I give you a word of advice? There's a difference in regulars, just as there is in premiums. You want the best of the regulars, don't you? Well, that's what you get when you use American gas. It's refined by the makers of Amoco gas. It's the leader in the regular field. For this wonderful American gas, for all famous Amoco products, stop at the Amoco sign of greater values from Maine to Florida. Tune in to Don Hollenbeck on Monday. This is the CBS Radio Network.